Despain, real one. Where were you born, Mr. Despain?
In London.
Which year was this?
1917.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a civil engineer.
And was he British with a name like Despain?
No, he was French.
How had he come to live in England?
Well, he came in England because he was selling armament to the British government and the Russian government, and he was a traveller, in a way. He visited several foreign countries, and he met my mother here, got married, and I was born.
So your mother was English, was she?
No, she was Belgian.
What language did you speak at home?
I started English, and then when I was 2.5 or 3 years old, I went to Belgium, because my father died in 1919, and I had to learn French in Belgium.
Did you speak French with a Belgian accent then?
I never did, no. No, I don't think so.
So you were bilingual?
I'm trilingual at the moment.
What is the third language?
Spanish.
How did you come to learn Spanish?
Well, I was interested in languages, so I went to Berlitz school, and then I went to live in Spain.
What was your education?
Well, I went to first school in Belgium, that's primary, infant school. Then I had primary school in Belgium. Secondary school in Belgium up till the age of 12 or 13. Then I went to France, carried on there, passed my baccalaureate, and went to university in Nancy.
To read what?
Electrical and mechanical engineering.
How old were you when you finished the course?
20.
And what profession did you take up?
Well, I tried. I was offered a job in the French railway, but when they asked for my papers and I produced a British passport, they said they couldn't employ me. So my cousin, who was a ship owner in a small way, I had agents here in London, so he say he brought me here, back here, and I study shipwrecking.
In the city?
In the city. And I was article clerk up till the war was declared. That is to say, I worked and I never got paid. And I was told I was lucky, otherwise I would have had to pay my boss £5 a week.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Ah, what was my reaction 45 years ago? I followed the newspapers and the news, and I don't think it came as a surprise. But as to personal reaction, I don't think I had any. I'm not the man to have violent reactions, so I don't know.
But you weren't dismayed?
Well, I thought of the war like the 1418 war, and trench warfare, it wasn't a very pleasant prospect, but beside that, I don't think I had any reaction whatsoever.
How did you come to be in SOE?
Well, I joined the DCLI in the early 40. First of all, I tried to volunteer because my godfather had some relation in the Foreign Office, and I asked him could I be useful, and he sent me for an interview somewhere in London, and there at the interview they say, well, thank you very much, but you're likely to be called up in a few months' time, and you should wait. So I waited, I was called up, I joined the DCLI. My CO sent me to the OCTU. I got my commission, and just a week before I got my commission, a chap came from somewhere to interview several people, and he interviewed me for foreign languages. And I heard no more about it up to the time, having got my commission, I was posted to the DCLI in the New Forest, and in within 3 weeks or a month, I was called to report to the War Ministry. And there I was interviewed by Gilgut, who asked me, can you ride a motorcycle? And I said yes. And the second question was, how do you feel going back to France? And I said, well, why not? He said that I could have a few weeks to think about it. And I said, well, there's no reason to think about it. Yes, I will go. So I thought I was going to be there next morning, you know. But it didn't happen that way.
You seemed to have been rather casual about the idea of going back. Did you not consider the danger?
Well, in wartime, there's danger anywhere, isn't there? And you may as well do something you can be useful at than just being a private soldier.
But you realised that you would be going back as an agent?
Well, with hindsight, I suppose I did, but at the time I don't know whether I did or not.
What happened to you next?
Well, I went to the various schools. The first one to find out whether I had the capability of leading that type of life. Then I went to other school to learn what an agent's supposed to be doing.
How did they test your capability of leading that kind of life?
Well, I didn't realize at the time what it was, but they tried to get you drunk. They listened to whether you dreamt in French or in English, how you manage a knife and fork and things like that.
Did they succeed in getting you drunk?
No, because I'm afraid I've got a very good liver.
And why did they want to know about how you handled a knife and fork?
That I don't know. I presume they wanted to know how one behaves. Because, as you know, the knife and fork are handled a different way in France than they are in England.
What's the difference?
Well, the French one more or less follow the American idea. They cut their meat first and then change over. They eat their soup that way instead of eating it that way.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, with the spoon, you got your soup plate there. In England, when you it's nearly empty, you upset your plate away from you. In France, you go towards you. And I presume that's one of the things they noticed. I don't know.
And did you dine in the French fashion or in the English fashion?
Well, the CEO there was gourmet, and we had very good meals. And I should say we had mostly French type of meals, yes.
But what were your...
My table manners?
Yes.
Oh, my table manners are English when I'm in England and French when I'm in France. The same way where you keep your hands, whether you put them on the table or on your knees.
And where did this initial vetting take place?
At Wanborough Manor.
Can you remember any of the personnel there at Wanborough?
No, except the CEO, whose name I've forgotten. It was just something. Yes, there was a chap there. He was Anglo-Chinese. I think he was a banker. He became a banker afterwards. A chap called Breen.
Breen?
Breen. B-R-W-E-N. Well, whether that was his real name or not, I believe it was his real name, because afterwards he was in Hong Kong in the banking world. But the other people I can't remember.
Where did you go after Wanborough?
After Wanborough, I went up to Scotland to have some kind of commando training.
How did you take to that?
All right, except when I tore the muscles of one leg. So I spent about 2 months at home, and the physiotherapist, paid for by SOE, came to my house every day to see me ride. So although I did go to the jumping school afterwards, I didn't do any jumps. I just couldn't. I mean, I wasn't in a physical state to do so.
How long did it take to heal?
Well, I still had after effect about 40 years later, but at the moment I'm 2 inches short on this side, but it doesn't show anymore.
On your left side? Mm. How did you like the commando training?
Well, as I said before, I mean, I don't react very violently to anything, and I just took it in my stride.
Was there any aspect of the training that you had that you didn't like?
No. No. I mean, don't forget I was much younger and I was quite fit, having already spent quite a year in the army, or even more than a year in the army. And I just took it in my stride.
Any part of the training which you specially liked?
No, I mean, the training wasn't so much as specific in any way. It was a general training, physical fitness, excuse me, blowing up things, map reading, all kinds of things like that. Jumping from windows, rowing at sea, climbing walls, coming down the ropes, and rowing, you know, generals, which is more or less the start of the commando training.
What was the spirit of the men and women with whom you were training?
We had no women with us at the time. Well, they all enjoyed it. I mean, we lived hard and enjoyed ourselves hard.
Were any of them returned to unit?
Not that I know.
How long did this commando-style training last, do you know?
It's I don't know, a month or 6 weeks, I have no idea. I mean, it's a long time ago.
And after that?
After that, then I went to the parachute school, where I didn't do anything. And after that, I went to Bewley to learn about security. Then after that, I went to Thames for the Wireless School.
What did you learn about security at Bewley?
Silly things. Things we never used in the field at all. Like how to pass messages, which was so obviously wrong, and we soon forgot all about that.
You mean it seemed obviously wrong at the time?
Well, it was. It was silly.
What kind of ways did they show you which were silly?
Well, it was. I believe the instructor was an actor, and he was very good at disguises, but not very good on security. How do you pass a message to somebody? Where you leave it and or things like that. Passing a message in a cafe, which is so obviously wrong, and I mean we never did it in real life.
Why was it wrong to pass a message in a cafe?
Because it was so obvious and you were passing a message the way he taught us to do so. You know, passing pieces of paper in newspaper or things like that. I mean, things you see on TV nowadays, but in real life it doesn't happen that way.
What is the best way to pass a message then?
Don't ask me now. The best way is to be very casual about it. And certainly not write anything down. I mean, I'm not an agent anymore. I'm just a normal private citizen now.
But were people cynical about the methods they were being taught at Bewley at the time? Or
no,
with hindsight?
With hindsight, yes. I think at the time it was a bit of a laugh. even including the interrogation we had, because the living under false circumstances, and you knew jolly well you were not risking anything, so the interrogation were, although well conducted, I mean the recipient, the chap who was being interrogated, knew it was a joke, and so most of the time we laughed. We certainly were not frightened. So that was no training at all, because under normal circumstances you wouldn't have laughed about it.
They woke you up in the middle of the night, did they, to have this practice interrogation?
Oh, no. At Bewley, I think it was a buckmaster who came and interrogated us. He was very good at it, but I'm afraid I just couldn't take it seriously. Afterwards, when we went to the other scheme, where we were sent in the countryside, a long way away, and had to give addressed to the local police, and then we were more or less chased up by field security and in the court interrogated, and that was a bit more serious because you didn't know about anything about that. I mean, you didn't know you were going on that scheme to be interrogated. You thought you were on that scheme just to use a wireless set and see whether you could make it work.
Can you describe what happened to you on that scheme?
Yes, I think I went to Loughborough, booked myself in a hotel, rang up somebody, but certainly not the police, was told to go to the Black Boy to collect a letter from the porter, and whatever was in it, in the letter, do what they asked me to do. Then I had to go to Derby, and I've forgotten what they asked me to do, and they asked me to do something. Then I went back to some digs. He was a company sergeant major's home. His wife and old mother put me up there, and there the field security men came and interrogated me, but as I didn't want anything to do with him, I mean, he didn't get anywhere. He wasn't, obviously, not a very good field security man. And when that was over, I came back to Thames.
What about the wireless training? Did you find that straightforward, or were there problems?
Well, when I was in as a private, I was in the signal platoon, and therefore I knew some Morse and things like that. And at Thames, it was a question of being able to get over 18 words a minute. I mean, I could do 16, but I couldn't do 18. It took me about 3 or 4 months to get over to 18, and you didn't qualify unless you did go over 18. So I'd stayed at Thames quite a long time. I think I stayed Thames for the best part of at least 6 months in 1942.
What kind of equipment were you training on?
Well, we train on the just a key without a set in the school, and then afterwards we were taken by car or lorries or van, I should say, and went all over the countryside and sent messages with the set they gave us. They also taught us how to repair a set, but I'd never been able to. So,
if your set broke down, you wouldn't have been able to repair it?
Well, actually, it did happen while I was in France, and I certainly didn't know how to repair it. No, my life might have changed.
Was that because the training was inadequate?
No, they train you on a set. I wouldn't say a cat whisker type of set, but I mean not much bigger. And the set I had in France was a big suitcase, of which I knew nothing of the inside.
So why could they not have trained you on the type of thing?
Because
that
it didn't exist at the time. I believe it was a new set. They had, I think we trained on the on what they call the Polish set, which was the little things like that. But from the way the place I went to in France, the Polish set wasn't strong enough to be received in England. So they trained me on the something Mark II, which was a big suitcase. You must have seen it. You've got one in the museum.
Yes. Did that complete your training with the wireless?
The wireless completed my training for that year. Afterwards, I went to France.
Were the people with you and you yourself, were you all impatient about going, or were you quite happy that this training was taking quite a long time?
Well, we had an easy life. I don't suppose we bothered. I mean, I know some people say they were keen to go. I don't think I was keener than anybody else, or less keen than anybody else. I don't know. I mean, when the time came, I went to France.
When did the time come? Can you remember?
Well, I went to France in July 42.
And what was the plan as far as you were concerned?
Do you mean what I was supposed to be doing?
Yes.
Well, I was supposed to be the secretary to Boddington, Major Boddington, who was going to go all around France to see what the various réseaux were up to. I had no briefing before I went, that's another thing. I was just told, there you go with Boddington and assist him. Boddington was no doubt briefed, but I wasn't.
Wasn't it specified as to how exactly you were supposed to help him?
I was supposed to be there as his wireless operator. He was going around France, and I would send back his reports.
What about the cover which you had?
I didn't have it. Well, I didn't really have a cover story. My cover story was, first of all, I was 5 years older than I was. I had a different name, and I was supposed to be a student, which is just ridiculous. I mean, at that age, you're not a student anymore, and in any case, students were looked upon very suspiciously.
For what reason?
Well, the student without being at any school, at any university, I mean, what are you doing?
But you had false papers describing you as a certain individual.
I had papers describing me as a student. Born in Cherbourg, where we were told all the records were destroyed, and I find out after the war in France they keep records in two different places. The Cherbourg record might have been destroyed, but they certainly were not destroyed in the other place. So a fallacy. Lie under which I live happily, but I only knew the answer after the war.
What was your name? Can you remember?
Desgranges.
How do you spell it?
Desgrang.
And you said that earlier that you didn't speak French with a Belgian accent.
No, I didn't. No.
But was your accent neutral or regional? Or?
My accent was entirely neutral, because nobody ever could find out in France from what part of France I came from. And I still have the same accent.
What other preparations did you make for going?
Do you mean in what way? School or what?
In all ways.
Well, I was kitted out with my own clothes because they were French. I gave some of it away for other people. I went there with just one coat and two shirts and about two underpants. And I went, when the winter came, I asked for an overcoat because it was cold, but it never came. And yet I had given my own overcoat to the SOE to send to me, but preparation, none whatsoever.
Had they told you much about how France had changed since you had been there?
Well, France hadn't really changed because in 42, in that part of France where I went to, the French still lived like they did pre-war. I mean, don't forget, I went to Cannes, and Cannes in those days was full of people who were caught by the war and didn't fancy going back to northern France. They were the playboys who went to the casinos and had parties. There were some of the French officers who were there and they never rejoined their troops and had a good time. France was exactly the same as in France in 1938. Even more so, because people, I should say, enjoyed themselves much more, possibly because they didn't know what was going to be next.
What about the flight? Can you recollect that?
The
flight out?
Ah, yes, the flight out, yes. We left from somewhere near St. Neots. Thamesford. We went to Cornwall for the rest of the night. And then from there on, we took the same plane and flew to Gibraltar. And we had a dogfight with two German fighters round about Cherbourg. And we were shot at. I think there were several bullets all through the plane and one through the propeller. The navigator was trained in Canada, and I had to point out to him that Gibraltar was, we passed it, and we were over Algeria by the time I told him. So we came back, landed in Gibraltar, and then from Gibraltar, spent a few days there, and went by Felucca to Cannes with a Polish crew.
So no plane was shot down during the dogfight?
No.
How close did the German planes come?
Well, what, inside the plane you can't see anything. All you could see from time to time is the rear gunner turning round and therefore the light coming into the plane. But otherwise, you could hear the noise of his gun, but you couldn't hear the noise of the bullets being fired at you.
Must have been a terrifying experience, was it?
Well, when you don't know what's happening, you say, I'm not a chap who worries. I'm sorry, but this is my makeup. I think they told a lot of false story about that thing. I read somewhere in somebody's book that all kind of things happen, but it didn't. I mean, there were a German seaplane, I heard afterwards, who saw us, but after a while, I mean, they couldn't keep up with us, and we changed our course. I think we passed in between Berlinga Island and Lisbon. Instead of passing out at sea, we went into territorial water, and we flew very low through a hole in the plane. You could more or less see something of the coast. I mean, it was uncomfortable, but that's about all.
What false things have been said about it?
Well, they say all kind of things about... Well, I've forgotten really, but I know when I read it, I said, that's wrong. Then the plane was really shot up, and they did all kind of thing about against the attackers, but really, nothing happened.
So you mean the book made too much of the incident?
Yes. I don't know who wrote it, because the only people who knew about it were the pilot, the navigator, the engineer, and there was Boddington, myself, Yvonne Rudela, and Frage, the Frenchman.
What kind of a chap was Boddington?
Well, I didn't really know him very well. I could only give you the impression given to me after.